COC, episode number 8, Scar and Annihilus versus Beta Ray Bill.
When he ran, he couldn't stand still. He ran away one day, and also I ran with him. He ran so fast.
Welcome, everybody, to the COC podcast, where we put the attack in comicattack.net. I am your ever-friendly host, Jeff Jackson. And there's the train that I'm about to get on. See you later.
All aboard.
All aboard the COC Express. And with us, as always, right next to the train is the Canadian Cape Killer, Ian Johnson.
How's it going?
Good, man. How are you?
Can't complain.
Excellent. And with us also this week are our competitors, Mr. Dan Brien.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going well. It is going well.
It's changed for me now. It's not so good anymore.
Okay. You have highs and you have lows.
Yes, that's true.
For you. So, and also returning again from last week, Mr. Eli Anthony.
Hey guys, how's it going?
The undefeated Mr. Eli Anthony thus far in the game.
Am I?
Thus far you are, but we do have to decide last week's match, so. So we don't know. We'll see as we go through the show. So, I have been sick this week, guys, and so I'm hoping I'm not gonna be coughing or stuff. I had strep throat all week, and it was ugly. There were nasty things. There were misty poos in my mouth.
Oh, jeez, Jeff.
Yeah, it was bad. It was bad. It was a bad thing. Everybody else, okay? Feeling healthy and ready to argue a good show tonight?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And Ian's got his peanut butter sandwiches and his beer, right?
Oh, so good.
Excellent. Well, we are from the website comicattack.net, where we have lots of opinions and thoughts about comic books and comic news. And we ask that definitive question of who would win in a fight between Scar and Annihilus and Beta Ray Bill. Scar and Annihilus or Beta Ray Bill, as we will discuss later on tonight. Here's how COC works. Each week we will be joined by two of our managers who have each secretly submitted a Marvel character to fight. Each manager gives their rationale on the show and explains why their guy or guys can win, and they hoping to convince Ian and myself and you listeners out there, you brilliant listeners out there. You can go back and listen to episode number 1 to hear who all was drafted in the entire competition, and we are slowly whittling away characters as we go through this. So, but in order to win, the competitor has to receive the best 2 out of 3 votes between my pick, Ian's pick, and the pick of you listeners out there who voted on the comicattack.net poll. We will announce the winner sometime in the midst of this show, kind of in the middle of the show. So we will talk about last week's fight in just a few minutes. And you can find all the rules for playing the game on a link in the post for this very episode.
So here's how... sorry.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, folks, you'll want to stay tuned. Tonight, we find out what's on the face of the Canadian penny.
Yes, the mystery will be revealed.
Dude, I am so excited about that. I've waited weeks. Weeks.
Dang.
Yeah.
I'm gonna have to put you guys on mute and go find a penny now. Just joking. All right. So not that the seasoned listeners need this, but let's go through how you vote. first thing you want to do is you need to listen to the podcast. Then what you do is come back here to comicattack.net to the post for that episode. Share your opinion, comment somewhere in the thread, and help sway the public opinion and Jeff's opinion and my opinion. Vote on the poll that's in the post. You have until Sunday nights at 9 p.m. to vote. That's Eastern time. And that's when we record the show. Votes at the time of recording will be the only ones that count. Email Jeff at jeff@comicattack.net or leave us a voicemail at 706-761-0115 with your questions or comments. And you never know, you'll make it on the show. Call, you'll make it on the show.
There will be much celebrating and joy and tears when we finally get that first caller.
That's going to be great. Yeah. Listen to the next episode to see who wins. The winner will be announced at the beginning of the show. One small disclaimer, this is all very subjective. Have fun with it. And if your favorite character doesn't win, laugh it off. Just keep on listening. If you really want to check out the statistics for these guys, go to the Marvel Wiki and check out their fight stats there. And that's not very subjective at all. It's very scientific, eh, Jeff? The Marvel Wiki stats.
Oh, those are completely unreliable and notoriously wrong.
Oh, I saw somewhere else that those are what you go by.
No.
Okay.
You can base everything on those.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, all the information on the Wikipedia, even though I link to those wiki sites just so people can get an idea for the character and stuff. All of that information is just is wrong and not up to date and all that stuff. So,
you're saying like a fight between like say X-23 and Franklin Richards wouldn't be fair?
I would say that would not be a fair fight.
Okay.
And in fact, I would also say that Franklin Richards probably should never be drafted in a fight scenario like this.
He's pretty powerful. Yeah. I think it's his speed that's down though. It's his speed, right? That's low. Anyway, sorry. I'm getting off task here.
Deadpool's pretty fast, I hear though. So
Deadpool. Yeah. Not as fast as Cannonball, but he's fast.
That's true. True.
The other thing that we would love to see is we would love to see comic artists send us your picks. You know, for instance, you even amateur artists, if you happen to, you know, envision these fights in your mind and you want to draw it out or draw some of the characters out, send us in a sketch. We'd love to post your version of the fight or your version of the fighters. We'd love to see that.
Yes, we would definitely love to see that. And so now is the most one of the most exciting times of our show, where we talk about the fight of the weeks. Or the week. And let's start with Dan. Are you ready? Or
yeah, I'm ready. Time?
Why don't you kick us off with your fight of the week?
Sure thing. I am going with the fight that took place in X Factor. I assume you read X Factor, Jeff.
I did.
Me and you are the only two people that read X Factor.
Oh, so. Man, so good. Such a good book.
So this issue, of course, was written by Peter David, as always. The artist for this one, though, was Leonard Kirk. I'm sure some of you are familiar with Kirk's work.
Star Trek fame.
What's that?
He's of Star Trek fame, right?
Yes, Star Trek, yes.
Sorry.
So, okay, so a bunch of stuff happens. It sort of relates to previous stories, as most of X-Factor always does with Peter David. But essentially the team, or a small part of the team, we have Jamie and Longshot, who else is in there? Shatterstar and Layla. They're in the morgue for this. They were called into the morgue to be questioned about this body that, this town sheriff found or whatever. And all of a sudden, as they're investigating the body, it kind of wakes up. So there's this naked zombie lady that's terrorizing the team in the morgue. So she's basically beating the hell out of pretty much everyone, even Shatterstar. threw him away, and we got a bunch of Jamies trying to pin her down because she's wondering what's going on because she's dead and doesn't really realize what's happening. Finally, we get a bit of a reveal here at some point when the zombie lady, naked zombie lady, turns to Layla, and basically she's like, well, well, what do we have here? She calls her an acolyte for some reason. So I'm sure that'll be something Peter's going to elaborate on later on. And after that, Shatterstar comes up behind her, chops her head off, and she puts it back on. And then French kisses Layla Miller and runs away, or teleports away, laughing.
French kisses Layla, isn't she just a kid?
No, no, Layla's grown up now.
She's in her mid-20s or whatever.
I should hope so.
Yeah, so this naked zombie lady, she's like, this was a warning, kiddies. Get in my way again and I'll kill you all of you, and except for you, acolyte. And that's when she turns to Layla and basically kisses her. She's like, you're old BB's new best friend, so I don't know exactly what that means. And then she laughs and teleports away. And Jamie just looks at Layla. He's like, Layla, are you okay? And she's like, I'd be better if she hadn't used tongue.
Now, Dan, who do you think BB is?
I couldn't put my finger on it. I was trying to think back to past stories with X-Factor, but I don't know. What would BB and zombies and... I really don't know. Do you know?
I don't know. I mean, I was, you know, the only BBs I know are like Black Bolt.
Yeah.
I don't know who else. Bobby Brown. You know, he's pretty
well,
scary
demonic
these days.
Is, I mean, no, I'm kidding.
How about tonight's fighter, Beta Ray Bill?
There's no R.
Could it be? Yeah, B, Beta Bill. I don't know. It's a good mystery though.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, that was a great moment. Well, mine comes from I'll be honest, my fight of the week is not from my book of the week, but it is definitely my fight of the week, and that is the battle between Cyclops and Wolverine in X-Men Schism number 4. And what makes this so great is the art of the brilliant Alan Davis. And really, it's really the pages of the actual fight where there is no dialogue at all. It's just these guys fighting. And first of all, Wolverine has a trigger for a bunch of bombs that he's planted on Utopia because he's trying to get everybody off. And so he's really fighting Cyclops one-handed. And Cyclops is just letting loose, and they're fighting in the midst of this giant sentinel that's bearing down on Utopia. But, I mean, just the choreography of this fight is just so good. I mean, both of these guys are just among the most skilled fighters in the Marvel Universe, hand-to-hand, and it's just fantastic. But Ian mentioned this. We were talking about this before before we started tonight. And there's just this great panel of where Wolverine is trying to kind of rip his claws through Cyclops' optic blast, and you can just tell like the force of Cyclops' blast is holding Wolverine's claws back. And so these guys, I mean, they're just going at it. And there's another place where, like, Cyclops, like, ricochets a shot off the ground and hits Wolverine. And, I mean, it's just epic. I mean, it's just so well drawn. And it's great. But what I wanted to ask you guys, I mean, are all of y'all reading Schism?
Yeah, I have seen, most of it.
Okay.
I've been flipping through it. Like I said, my wife's the X-reader, but I tend to just snag her books and kind of just flip through them.
Okay.
But so I sort of know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm troubled by this, but I don't understand. I don't know. I wanted to see what you guys thought about this big debate between Cyclops and Wolverine, which seems to center around whether or not. The kids, the X-Kids should be in this war that they're in. And I just think neither position is defensible, and it's I don't know. I feel like it's kind of just taken. It takes me out of the story way too much. I mean, I don't understand why all of a sudden Wolverine is like this, you know, no kids allowed kind of thing when he has been an X-Man for so long and he's been...
He's mentored most of the X-Men.
And so I don't understand where this is kind of coming from for him, where all of a sudden he doesn't want kids to be fighting in these battles. And then... And I also don't think that Cyclops' position is very defensible. I mean, or it's just not, like, I don't know. Like, he's acting like this is the last stand for the X-Men, and it's like, no. I mean, New Mutants are being born every day because of Hope. And now Scarlet Witch, at least in Avengers Children's Crusade, spoiler warning if anybody hasn't read that, but she is giving mutants back their powers like she did Richter. So, yeah, you know, I don't understand why Cyclops is feeling like this is it. You know, we've got to defend this base or all mutants are going to die. So, I don't know. That's my problem with all of Schism.
In a sense, though, for Wolverine's mental state or his feeling about this, I think he has mentored a lot of the X-Kids. But I feel as if he probably feels that if these kids are thrown into battle, he will feel solely responsible if anything ever happens to any of them. Wolverine feels very responsible to most of the kids he's mentored. So I think he does not want to see them go before he does. Kind of like a parent never wants to see his child die before they do. Yeah. I think.
But why all of a sudden is he like that?
I think he's always been like that, but he's never really had this kind of a situation of this magnitude to deal with.
I actually see this almost completely opposite of you, Jeff.
Of course you do.
I think it's been a long time coming. I think they've done a nice job gradually changing Wolverine over the years. I think Jubilee for me might have been not the straw that broke the camel's back, but I think I think it might have been a big thing for him. And then when you then bring X-23 into the picture, and he's really done a lot to try and not put her in front and center in the battle kind of thing. And even when he did have her on X-Force, I kind of got the feeling like he had her on X-Force because he felt better having her close to him as opposed to leaving her with Cyclops to send out on suicide missions and stuff like that. And when it comes to Utopia and the whole thing about the stand right now, I see it more as symbolic of Utopia. And I love the stances because to me, it's like Cyclops is, his view is like Utopia is sort of, it's like a symbol of mutant unity kind of thing. In that if they say, and I think Generation Hope, the newest issue of Generation Hope really helped solidify this for me. Cyclops is basically saying, if we show them that, you know, they could just send Sentinels to Utopia and, you know, we're going to run away every time that they do. Basically, everyone's just going to keep building Sentinels and say, let's go hunt the mutants, right? And he says, we need to make a stand. Whereas you got Wolverine, who, you know, I think is a little, Cyclops is more the tactician. Wolverine's a bit wiser, right? He's an older guy. And I think he sees the value in, you know, ducking and running and living the fight another day. I think the kids play a role in it, but I think it's bigger than that. I think it's just more, you know, a mutant stance. And I think Wolverine says, you know, we don't need to see anybody else die here. We can, you know, the Sentinel's far enough away, we can leave, you know. And Cyclops is saying, no, we're going to stay and fight it. So, like, I'm almost approaching it like a Civil War type stance, where it's, you know, Wolverine and Captain America. And, you know, and maybe it's because I'm a long, long, long time Wolverine fan, but when I rationalize it the way I just did for you guys, right, I'm on Wolverine's side. Do you know what I mean? Like seriously, you're going to defend this hunk of rock? Why? Yeah. Go get Magneto to raise Cable's old island. What was it called?
Gray Malkin.
Yeah, Gray Malkin. Go get him to raise that from the bottom of the ocean, just like he did Asteroid M. You know what I mean? Like, and there you go. You start all over again. So I think Cyclops is way out of line, and, you know, I think Wolverine's got the right idea here, myself. And personally, I'm loving Schism. I think it's a even those the prelude to Schism.
Yeah.
When I read them, I was like, oh my goodness, this is maybe the four most boring comics I've ever read in my life. But now in hindsight, after reading what I've been reading with Schism, going back and thinking about it,
right.
Now I'm like, you know what? That's not bad. Like, you know, going back and thinking about it now I understand. I understand the whole decision sitting there thinking, you know, what the hell are we going to do here?
Right.
So yeah, I've really enjoyed it myself.
To me, it's kind of, it looks like Cyclops is really being set up to be the next Magneto.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
it's a bit heavy-handed,
and it's yeah, it is, and it looks like his team, based on the little preview images that Marvel's been putting out. I mean, he's going to have Magic, who is arguably a villain. I mean, you know, because of her demon background. Colossus, who's now Juggernaut, the White Queen. You have all these people who, you know, for all intents and purposes, could really make a pretty decent looking brotherhood. So,
yeah,
anyway, well, that was a good explanation. I do see that. I do see your point of view.
Well, and I'd love to see those guys become the Brotherhood,
yeah.
Especially if they walk that fine line of villainy and you know, because right now, and Jeff, I know you and me have talked about this. One of the things that the X-Men need right now, they need some good villains. Because all the villains are on their team now, you know. Well, like,
I will say those Hellfire Club kids are freaking awesome.
Oh,
I love
hate
them.
You hate them?
I can't stand them either.
I thought they were great.
But the thing that I don't get is they're kids. Like, it's like you got that little blonde-haired girl running around with a sword, chopping people's heads off and stuff. Like, seriously, you know, I know in Kick-Ass they made it seem like you could train this little girl to kill mobsters and stuff like that, but I gotta tell you, if my daughter's got a sword in her hand,
dude,
you know what I mean? There's nothing she can do to me. Like, I know, you know?
Wait, you mean you're not training your daughter to chop people's heads off?
Well, I am, but she still couldn't chop mine off.
Nice.
Well, I just good. Don't, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying these kids. And the leader, whatever that kid's name is.
Yeah, Kane.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I like it.
I like to smack his face.
you're supposed to want to. I mean, he's an ass. Yeah, you're supposed to. Anyway. All right. Well, sorry for that little tangent. Ian, what's your fight of the week?
No, that was good. I like talking about
that. Yeah, I did too. That was good.
For me, it was really hard. I had so many fights to choose from. And it's funny because the common link that tied them all together was they almost all involved Wolverine. At first, I was going to go with the Marvel Universe versus Wolverine. But I think that's too it was a Hulk-Wolverine fight, and I think that's too standard, right? You've seen the Hulk fight Wolverine 50,000 times. You've seen it once. You've seen it a million times. So instead, I'm going to go with the Fear Itself mini Uncanny X-Force, which was the final issue of that mini, number 3 of 3, written by Rob Williams and the art's by Simone Bianchi. And near the end of it, when they actually catch up with I can't remember his name. You know, just some other psycho religious fanatic.
Jonathan Standish.
That's it, Standish. He's got the answer. You know, he's going to drop this bomb in New York City, and it's going to wipe out all the humans because basically he's saving them from the suffering that the superheroes are bringing to the humans. It's ridiculous, but they're doing everything in their power to bring down the plane that he's delivering this bomb to New York City with without having the bomb go off. And then he's just about to go. They're on the ground. They've crashed the plane. He's reaching his finger out to push the button, you know, very climatic. You can see this on a television show or something like that, like 24 or something. And all of a sudden you see this big blood gush and his hand drops to the ground and there's Deadpool. And it's funny because this Standish guy, he's going on and on and on, you know, with his he's monologuing like a good villain would. And I'm just going to read for you for a second because I had to read it out loud to my wife even, who hates comics. I had to read this to her because I thought it was so funny. So Deadpool says, "Let me ask you something. And I've been claimed to be a theological scholar with all the answers to all the great questions. But if that bomb going off is God's will, then how come, despite fighter jets shooting missiles at it, the impossible plane crashed through skyscrapers in New York City, the firefight with killer mutants and all, why hasn't the and you know they do the old swearing symbols things still hasn't gone off?" And then Phantom X walks up to him and he says, the Standish guy is sitting there holding his bloody stump while he's going through this with him. And Phantom X walks up. He says, "Wade, You're a erudite and an heroic philosopher of rare and learned wisdom. And then Deadpool turns to him and says, word. Which I thought, I was like, that's awesome. So anyway, though, but then Wolverine gets in his face, right? While this guy's holding his bloody stump of a hand. And Wolverine, you know, has a couple of choice words to say to him and then just turns and cuts his head clean off. You know, and then he looks up at the church in front of him and says, wow, that's a beautiful building. So it's, you know, it's for me, it's classic X-Force. You know what I mean? When you see Deadpool a little bit earlier, a few pages earlier, Phantom X blew some guy away. They're just, you know, this is the X-Force team that X-Force is meant to be. Do you know what I mean? And not like they're not in the other books, but these guys are killers. You know what I mean? And they're not going to, they're not holding anything back. So great little sequence. Nice and bloody.
Definitely. Eli, how about you, man?
Well, I didn't read much of anything this week, but
really, I had a ton of books.
Oh, I'm not saying I have a ton of books. I just work's been kicking my butt this week.
Oh, okay.
So, just I went back and one of my favorite fights of all time. I'm gonna go back to it's in War of Kings number 3 from 09, I think.
Oh, that's a good one.
Now, Lilandra has been kidnapped. Vulcan is the emperor of the Shi'ar, and all crap is breaking loose. And Black Bolt and the Kree are their war with Vulcan. Anyway, the Guardians of the Galaxy are with the Starjammers, led by Havoc, and they make a raid on this ship that's carrying Lilandra. And right off the bat, they meet Gladiator and the Imperial Guard, and then it's on. It's just like a big melee. And my focus on here is Gladiator. Rocket Raccoon tricks Gladiator with some telepathic help from Rachel Gray into thinking a broomstick he's holding is some weapon designed specially for him, and that kind of takes him out of action for a little bit while the rest of them make their way to where Lilandra is being held so they can break her out. And, you know, you've got Drax kicking butt and a few other guys. And a few pages into it, Gladiator, he realizes that it's a fake. He's being tricked. And, of course, he comes out of it, and he's like a blur being drawn on the page. It's just a red and blue streak. And he punches all the Guardians of the Galaxy, Havoc, Lorna, all the Starjammers that are there on his way to Lilandra. And he gets there right as Havoc and Polaris, Lorna Dane, have broken her out of her cell. He shows up. He's standing over Lilandra, looking down at her. There's a couple of other Imperial Guard guys who are showing up, and they're like, all right, form around Gladiator. And Vulcan apparently had ordered them that if anything like this happened, they were to just kill everybody. Lilandra, whoever was trying to break her out. And so this guard member, I think he's Smasher, this member of the Imperial Guard.
Oh yeah.
He says, you know, Praetor, what are you waiting for? Emperor Vulcan's orders were clear. Now earlier in the series, Gladiator's inner monologue was something like, basically, Vulcan is a scumbag. I know he's an evil guy, but I'm sworn to serve the Emperor, and he sits on the throne. And so, you know, Lilandra makes this plea. She says, "Oh, Kallark, you know, was my life saved only to die now?" And Gladiator thinks. He turns and he looks at Smasher, and then he fires an eye beam right through the guy's head.
That's great.
For years, we've known that Gladiator loves Lilandra. He wasn't just in service to her as the Empress. He loved her. And then you see the terror on everyone's face. Even Lilandra, she's like, oh my goodness. And then the final panel of the book, Gladiator says, "I serve at the pleasure of Empress Lilandra."
Yeah.
It's like, yes, finally, Gladiator declared, he came clean with his love for her, and he's fixing to kick some butt. It was one of the greatest moments in comics.
Yeah.
It's like that whole series, and the whole time that Gladiator was serving Vulcan throughout the previous few miniseries when he was rising to power. I can't remember what they were called. You know, it's kind of like you were waiting for him to do this, for him to say, that's enough. Lilandra should be here. And he finally makes his stand, and it was pretty epic.
Yeah. That was a great miniseries. I mean, it really was just a well-written, it was epic battle throughout the whole thing. It was just a really good series. And the art of, who is that, Pelletier, or however you say his name? Who drew that? Is that right?
Yeah, Pelletier.
Yeah.
Pelletier?
Yeah, he was just really good. Perfect fit for that book.
Yeah, the art looks great.
Very cool. Good pick, man. That was War of Kings number 9?
Number 3 from 2009.
Oh, right, okay. Cool. Very good.
All right, so moment of truth. On to the results from last week's fight.
Oh, boy.
So
you want me to go first?
Well, I can't get into Comic Attack right now for some reason. It keeps. It's probably just my computer. I can't get into it. But so what's the poll? The poll's still saying Prince of Orphans. Dan said 6-4.
6-4. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So the poll has Prince of Orphans up 6-4. Yeah, Jeff, you want to go?
Yeah. This is a great. This is a really, really great battle. I mean, just in terms of people. I mean, it's not one of those headlining kind of battles. I mean, not a lot of people know who Prince of Orphans is. I mean, I had to do a lot of searching around to see what he can do. And Eli, I do apologize. I had read the wrong. I read his Golden Age origin.
Amazing.
Yeah, Amazing Man's origin rather than Prince of Orphans, which isn't much different, but still. So I ended up having to go back and look at a lot of more updated things. But anyway, to me, the most convincing argument was from Eli, who said that his main power is that he turns into mist. And not only can he turn into mist, but and it clearly says that when he turns into mist, people cannot hit him, but he can lay the smackdown on them. And what's the name of that move that he does, his finishing move?
Oh, Jaw Snapper in Twilight?
Yes.
Jaw
Snapper in Twilight. That is a bad move right there. And so the way that I see this happening, him immediately going into mist form. There was some talk about the wind and whether or not the wind would affect his mist form. And, honestly, I don't think Death Valley is the windiest to play. I mean, I think there are times where it has some wind, but I just don't think that's going to be a factor. And the fact that he can actually control himself as the mist, I just don't see that being a factor. But Hercules, unfortunately, is powerless, or is not as powered as he was in his regular form. He does have spider powers right now. He does have some pretty cool weapons, but really the main turning point for me was every week what I do on Twitter is I will post I'll post a link to the fight to the actual creators that I follow on Twitter, and so I did that, and so far none of the creators have written me back until this week, and Fred Van Lente wrote and actually responded to my question, which was could Hercules with the sword of Perseus, is that right? Could he cut, the mist, basically? And this is what Fred Van Lente, the writer of Hercules, said. Peleus, not Perseus. The sword of Peleus cuts through molecules. If Prince of Orphans retains molecular damage received in mist form when he turns human, then yes, he could be. Damaged by the sword. But see, here's the thing. I don't get the sense that he would reform. I really liked Eli's argument that he could he could go inside of Hercules and fight him that way. I mean, he could do this jaw Breaker in Motion or whatever it's called. I mean, I just think ultimately it's going to come down to Prince of Orphans taking him out. I just think there's too many ways and not enough ways for Hercules to even land a blow at all, no matter how quick he is, no matter how many spider powers he has, no matter even if he has a spider sense. When you're in the midst of a mist or a fog, when it's all around you, there's no way of being able to withstand that attack on all sides. So I give it to Misty Poo as
hey.
I give it, but see, you know, but Misty Poo, you could claim that as a title of honor, you know, that Hercules got beat by Misty Poo. That's my pick. Ian, what do you think?
Yeah, I say Prince of Orphans. I like most of the fights, what I've found myself doing for many of these fights, which is kind of opposite of what I had done in previous fights and previous competitions for COC, that is, where I really look into all these weird things with the fighters and different elements and how does the environment play in and all that kind of stuff. I've been finding myself simplifying these fights a little bit. And with Prince of Orphans and Hercules, what I think happens there is because, yeah, Hercules doesn't have his Herc strength and his Herc powers and things like that, but he's still Hercules. And, you know, you're not going to find too many more people who are much more arrogant than Hercules. Hercules is pretty sure that he could take anybody. And does he know Prince of Orphans? I don't know how well he knows him or not, but I think he's going to underestimate Prince of Orphans. And I think he's just going to want to, you know, think he's going to do his normal thing where he jaws at them and, you know, makes fun of them and stuff like that while he slaps them around a little bit. And I don't think Prince of Orphans even has to go into his mist form, to tell you the truth. I think, you know, with his spider powers that Herc has, no matter how many thousands of years of fighting training he has, I think Prince of Orphans beats the hell out of him. You know, I think Prince of Orphans just, you know, throws kung fu at him that he's never even dreamed of. And if he does happen to go into his mist form, which just allows him to, you know, appear here and then disappear and then appear here and disappear, I think he's just he just toys with Herc and just really does beat him up bad. And that's without anything fancy. So just some good old fashioned, you know, legendary Iron Fist like kung fu. You know, we talked about, I don't remember if we talked about it on the show or not. It might have been before or after the show, because we talk a lot before and after the show. But, and Eli can correct me here if I'm wrong, but all the immortal weapons seem to be afraid of the Prince of Orphans. Of all the immortal weapons, he's the one that kind of strikes fear in them. And if that mystical tournament hadn't been stopped early the first time through in the Iron Fist series, I'm pretty sure Prince of Orphans would have won. You know, he would have beat Fat Cobra. He would have beat Iron Fist. He would have beat all those guys. He's a one tough fighter. I own pretty much every one of his appearances, and I'm kind of biased. I'm a huge a fan of the all the immortal weapons. I can't believe they don't get more print time in comics, to tell you the truth. So yeah, that's my long story for saying that I pick Misty Poo as well.
All right. So shout out for Prince of Orphans and over Hercules. And what do you think? Do you agree, disagree? Email us at Jeff, or email me at jeff@comicattack.net. Call 706-761-0115. Let us know what you think about the fight. Feel free to comment on the post and add your two cents. And we do thank Fred Van Lente for adding his two cents in, even though I'm pretty sure he would have voted Hercules, but it was good to hear from a creator in that regard. So,
I think the old Hercules with his old powers, I don't think Prince of Orphans can beat him.
I agree.
You know, but this new guy, like, even if you look at it, can Prince of Orphans beat Spider-Man? Oh, damn straight he could.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
Well, anyway. Spider-Man, you know, with spider powers, I guess Herc is a lot more vulnerable, because Spider-Man can get beat. You know, he can get damaged and hurt pretty, fairly easily, I would say, what keeps Spider-Man or keeps Peter going is really is his willpower and his sense of responsibility, which Herc might not have. So you combine Herc with spider powers, I don't even think he's as tough as Spider-Man.
Mm. Well, and the thing that I couldn't get out of my head either was Hawkeye from that new Avengers one-shot, yeah. Spider Island, and his problem mastering those spider powers, do you know what I mean? And while, you know, there's been many other one-shots and things that have shown regular folk who have no problem mastering the spider powers, I think it comes into play a little, you know what I mean? Like, it's a new power. It's not, he hasn't been Spider-Man for the past 50 years, you know what I mean? He's been Spider-Man for a couple of weeks. So I think you got to factor that in too. It's new.
Well, there you go. So that's last week's fight.
So I don't think... Do we have any emails or voicemails at all, Jeff?
No, sir. Not this week. But it does go it, we should mention that the Eli is undefeated thus far. And, you know, and Andy is sitting at 1-2. Dan is sitting at 2-1. And Tom is sitting at... 0-2-1. So Eli is the clear forefront of the contest here. So these guys are going to have to get it in gear, and I think Dan has got quite a show of force for tonight's fight. And speaking of tonight's fight, we're going to go on right to that, which is Scar and Annihilus versus Beta Ray Bill.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I want to give a quick overview of these characters. First of all, Scar is a fairly new character in Marvel, and he is the son of Hulk. And Hulk, when Hulk was away on a different planet, he fell in love with an alien woman named Kyara, and they fell in love and had a baby, and it was all beautiful and wonderful until she died and got blown up. And but her child survived and grew up, and I'm not sure how all that happened, but anyway, now he is this Hulk teenager kind of character, but he's pretty much got all of Hulk, well, maybe not all of Hulk's powers, but he's got a lot of Hulk's powers and some of Kyara's powers as well, and so he's pretty badass. And right now he is kind of the king of the Savage Land. He is he's fighting there and in his own book. Am I correct? Is that right? He's in his own book.
That was a miniseries. I don't think it was an ongoing.
Okay, miniseries. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was the most recent appearance. Even though after, you know, he came to Earth and he followed Hulk around for a while and became buddy buddies with Bruce Banner and all that stuff. So Scar is a pretty sizable threat, I think. And teaming, this is our very first double team that Dan has thrown out. Each of the managers get one opportunity in the game to team up two of their characters and to fight against another competitor. And so Dan has picked the team of Scar and Annihilus. And Annihilus is a longtime villain of the Fantastic Four. He's been the master and ruler of the Negative Zone for many years. Most recently, though, he has been the originator and the big bad of the Annihilation series that Abnett and Lanning did, and was kind of the instigator of that whole battle and sending the Annihilation Wave, which was a big army of people from the Negative Zone, into the cosmic Marvel Universe. And so he is also a pretty sizable threat as well. And most recently, he is the person responsible, I think, for the death of the Human Torch in Fantastic Four. So the Fantastic Four do not put Annihilus high on their list of people to send Christmas cards to. And then we've got Eli's character, which is Beta Ray Bill. And Beta Ray Bill is when the burning galaxy was destroyed by Surtur, the surviving Corbinites decided that they needed a champion, and so they chose Beta Ray Bill, and he transformed into this cybernetic being resembling a fierce creature, and they sent him off, and he has been a Thor competitor. He's fought Thor. He has he's also been one of Thor's greatest allies, and most recently Beta Ray Bill is in the Annihilator series. He's been in kind of the Cosmic Marvel stuff, and he is featured pretty prominently in the Annihilator series limited series that's going on right now by Abnett Lanning as well. So there, that's them.
Good. And the three competitors tonight are going to be fighting on a brand new environment, which is the International Space Station. For those of you that don't know, the International Space Station is a habitable artificial satellite that orbits in low Earth orbit, just outside of Earth's orbit. It's made up of many, many, many small compartments that they've, you know, over the years just kept adding on and adding on. So I think it went up in 1998-ish, somewhere around there, and they still keep adding to it today. It has it's a cramped quarter, so there's a lot of room inside, but in terms of each individual section, not a lot of headroom, not a lot of space to move. Some of the components are considerably old compared to the others, and last I could find, there are currently, I think, six astronauts of various origins from Japan, Russia, and the United States that are on board. Now, I'm sure if Eli or Dan or anybody else wanted to look a little closer, they could probably correct me on that and find the most up-to-date information on that. But that's the last thing that I found. And one of the things that we talked about before the show, too, was how does this environment impact these fighters in terms of staying on the environment? Just so that everybody knows, what we normally do in these competitions is we say if a character leaves the environment, they kind of tap out. We consider it fleeing. But when it comes to this environment here, we're pretty sure that when we're talking about Scar, Annihilus, and Beta Ray Bill, you know, three of the heaviest hitters in the Marvel Universe, they're most likely going to be leaving this environment. So we're not going to count it as though they're fleeing or the fight's over or anything like that if they happen to end up outside of the space station and fighting, you know, in the low Earth atmosphere around it.
And if they destroy the space station, that's fair game as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. I love the International Space Station, by the way.
Yeah.
I love it as an environment. It's fantastic.
It's going to be tougher. It's going to be tough with these big guys. I like it as an environment with, you know, you got like Wolverine and Black Panther going at it or something like that on there. I like it for that.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting to watch these two guys talk about it with these massive human beings. Do you know what I mean? Like, can Scar even stand up in this space station? I don't know. You know, like, but it'll be cool to see. All right. So onto the famous COC coin toss. This is the last of our coins. I believe we've gone through them all, right, Dan?
Yep, we have. It's the last.
This is the last one, so we're going to use the Canadian penny, which, you know, in appearance looks a lot like the American penny at first glance until you look a little closer at it. And you see on one side, of course, never failing, is the picture of the Queen. And on the other side,
you've got the Lincoln Memorial on that side, don't you? That's amazing. Wow.
What is that?
Good call.
Jeff's going to be disappointed because I know we were really hyping this up, and he was sure it was going to be, you know, the Wendigo or Wolverine or somebody on this side of the coin, which would
maybe
be cool.
A Maple Leaf or something. That's my guess. A Maple Leaf or a hockey player.
Oh, I see. You cheated, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, it's the Maple Leaf. You're right.
There's Is it really?
Maple Leaf, yeah.
Ah! That was a total guess. I was thinking Alpha Flight.
Yes, good call.
Nice.
Good call. So we'll do our coin toss. Who's calling it? I never get these straight.
You Eli, guys I think I'm me. Home.
Yeah. Eli's calling it?
Yep.
All right. Eli, what do you want? You want Queen or Leaf?
I'll stick with the trend and stay away from the Queen. I'll take the Leaf.
All right. Let's give her a shot. Queen it is.
Oh.
Actually, that's right. Pretty cool because as a Canadian, and I don't think I've ever lost a coin toss.
Yes. Nice. Really?
I don't think so. We'll have to look back, but...
Oh, that's funny. We should keep
Can I launch a protest? I say we use an American penny next time. Next time Dan's on.
But see, hey, Eli, the problem with that is that your money's worth so little up here, nobody keeps it.
How do we come back to that?
There's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do against those Canadians. Oh, that's good.
All right, Dan, so what are you thinking?
Yeah, I will go first.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, here we go. So here's how I see the fight going down. I actually wrote something down. You'll be proud of me, Ian.
Are you not souped up on, you know, Sudafed or anything like that tonight?
No, just beer.
Just beer. Okay, good. All right.
Okay, so first off, a bit of background, which you guys have already elaborated on mostly, but I just wanted to emphasize that the space station itself is a very small environment to fight in. It's basically a cluster of small capsules that are linked together by small, even smaller corridors. Each capsule varies in size, but they range to being about as small as a minivan on the inside, or as big as a bus after you factor in all the structure support and equipment. Needless to say, there's not a lot of room to maneuver. This can actually work to the advantage of both Scar and Annihilus. Annihilus, in his last appearance, was still an adolescent. Let's not forget, though, that mentally he is the same old Annihilus. Cunning, ambitious, and a little paranoid, but physically he is currently much less imposing than he used to be. He can still fly, thanks to his wings. He still has enhanced strength, speed, and durability, excuse me, thanks to his exoskeleton suit. He can also survive up to a year if he had to in the unpressurized portions of the space station, which are void of oxygen. Most of all, though, he is small. Annihilus can move around with much more agility than Bill in this environment, I would argue anyways. So Scar also has this advantage. Some of you might not exactly know this, but when not in gamma form, Scar is also an adolescent. He is a teenage boy. He can change forms at will, thus allowing similar agile navigation of the space station as Annihilus. So he basically reverts to his sort of looks like his mother. So there's a Sakaar native, gray-skinned teenage boy. I think Bill's good nature will actually prevent him from striking the adolescent duo at first sight, assuming that eventually they'll find each other because they are at opposite ends of this space station, whichever, you know, there's no real up or down or left or right, but eventually we assume they'll find each other or this will be a boring podcast. He's not in the business. Bill is not in the business of bashing kids in the face with a hammer, but he will quickly recognize Annihilus for who he truly is. Annihilus will react as well, shooting his energy beams at Bill. Bill might underestimate Annihilus here, as Bill is prone to do sometimes. From what I've read, Bill is pretty naive and gullible in a lot of situations he finds himself in, often not understanding the full nature of what he's up against. Thinking that the bug-like creature is actually holding the gray-skinned child hostage, the last of the Corbinites will try and subdue his immediate opponent by mild force. He would throw Stormbreaker at the environment, attempting to bring some panels and debris down on Annihilus, hoping to trap him. During this time, Scar was off to the side playing the wounded child, until such a time where Bill was distracted enough by Annihilus to allow him to turn into his gamma form and attack Bill from behind. Scar's strength is mighty enough to hold Beta Ray Bill in a grapple for at least a few moments. He was trained by Bruce Banner to be able to take down the Hulk himself, after all. During this time, Annihilus would regroup and start throwing everything he has at Beta Ray Bill, effectively knocking him off his feet as Scar releases his hold on him. Grasping Stormbreaker, Bill must decide whether he wants to risk damaging the integrity of the space station and potentially killing his foes along with the small amount of crew that are on the space station, which Bill is not likely to do. In this case, he is hindered by his environment. These are very confined spaces, and he cannot allow himself to unleash the full power of Stormbreaker. At this point, Bill decides to try and best his opponent with brute force. Beta Ray Bill is formidable, one of the best hand-to-hand combatants that Thor has ever fought. Scar and Annihilus are no slouches, though. Oftentimes, they've faced multiple enemies at once and taken them down. If they manage to work together, they can overwhelm Bill in this confined environment. Scar and Annihilus have a savage streak. They will claw, beat, and bite Bill until he goes down. Scar and Annihilus are both durable enough to receive a fair amount of punishment from their foe. But it won't be enough. Bill just won't have what it takes to bring both of them down. If he bests one, the other will recuperate and come at him, and the process will repeat. Bill will fatigue before his opponents do, and when the time comes, either of them could deliver the final blow, although that will more likely be Scar. So there you go. That's it. I'm done.
Holy moly. All right. Eli. What do you got to say?
Oh, I got plenty.
Go, Eli.
Okay. First off, this is first in my mind about them working together. Annihilus is ridiculously paranoid. In the Annihilation Wave series, when Thanos he had captured Moondragon, he basically made it so that Moondragon would be in proximity to Annihilus, and then he had her show him what Annihilus's mind looked like what he was thinking. Annihilus's main goal was the death of every other form of life in the universe. That was the whole point of the Annihilation Wave. What?
Advantage me.
Yeah, yeah. okay. And the final image she showed him was Annihilus sitting on his throne underneath the bones and skulls of every other creature. And Annihilus's thoughts were, life buzzes. I must extinguish it all until I can have peace and quiet. So there's no teamwork with Annihilus. He's paranoid. And he hates and wants to kill everyone. He had a tenuous partnership with Thanos, and that was only because Thanos promised to deliver Galactus to him. And that was the only reason they worked together in the Annihilation Wave. And so I doubt seriously that there's going to be any teamwork and working together, number one. So I think that's going to be a real problem, because with someone like that, Annihilus won't be the one on that team to say, hey, Scar, hey, little buddy, here's the plan. Let's do this. No, he's going to be by himself. And if Scar comes to him with a plan, I don't really think that'll work either, because Annihilus would undoubtedly give him some lip and say something arrogant and cocky, or just smack the crap out of him. And Scar's, he's a hothead too. He basically, and this was brought out in his miniseries that you talked about, Scar, King of the Savage Land, he's basically an adolescent, a teenager himself, which was why Scar and Shanna the She-Devil thought that their son, who's a teenager, and Scar would get along so well. So anyway, that actually, yeah, like you mentioned, Dan, they're both teenagers. And Annihilus has the same mind he had before, so he's a paranoid person who wants to destroy every other living thing who's a teenager. That doesn't bode too well for teamwork. So anyway, and you mentioned about Bill and Scar being able to hold Bill. Bill is as strong as Thor. Bill can break planets with his punches. Bill has fought the Silver Surfer and that other Herald of Galactus, Stardust, at the same time, and managed to not only come away pretty much unscathed, but beat the tar out of Stardust and just leave him lying there. So now the space station, it's not the toughest environment, and it is confining. Really, you know, if Beta Ray Bill or Scar, or even Annihilus, if they stretched their arms like they yawned, let's say, they would bust through this thing. So I see this fight definitely exiting the space station. As soon as it starts, it's going to. And an interesting ability that Stormbreaker gives to Beta Ray Bill is an ability to sense energies. Stormbreaker is the hammer that Beta Ray Bill wields. It's basically just like Mjolnir. It was made for him by Odin, and it's a copy of Mjolnir, a duplicate. And so if he sees Annihilus and then a cute little boy, Beta Ray Bill, he's not a fool. He knows he's on a space station. He knows that children don't live on space stations. Stormbreaker is going to let him know, hey, there's something up with that little boy that's not a little Earth boy. Beta Ray Bill knows he's fighting two guys here. He's not going to be fooled by that trick. He's going to know that he can unload on that kid, and it's not going to be like pounding on a regular human boy. And, I mean, I think you said, Dan, that the kid has gray skin, kind of like his mother. And so, you know, he's not going to... I haven't seen any of his appearances in comics where he has transformed into a little boy. So I don't know, but I'm going to assume, since you said that he doesn't look like a human, that he's gray. So that's not going to fool Bill one bit. And with how big Bill is, there's not going to be any sneaking around behind him or beside him. He's going to fill up from side to side whatever corridor or cargo bay they're in, you know. So I see this fight exiting the space station real quick. They're going to destroy whatever part of it they're in. Scar can't fly. Annihilus, he can fly. All of these guys can survive in space without breathing apparatus. So there's no problem there. Beta Ray Bill and Scar can fly. Beta Ray Bill can also teleport with Stormbreaker. So once the fight goes outside, Scar, he'll kind of be clinging on to the space station, but if he decides to join the action at all and, like, you know, jump after Bill, that's it. He's floating. He has no way to stop his progress or alter his trajectory. Bill could just move out of his way and say goodbye, and Scar just floats on. And Beta Ray Bill, his strength is on par with Thor. Annihilus, his physical strength is not nearly that great. It's about half that. And Annihilus, from what I understand, since he doesn't have the cosmic control rod or the quantum bands, which he had both during the Annihilation Wave series, which was pretty much, I think, the last time we really saw him, he doesn't have his energy blasts anymore. So all he has is hand-to-hand combat. That's the only offensive weapon he has. And that's not going to do jack for him against Beta Ray Bill. As I said, Bill has gone hand-to-hand against Heralds of Galactus and been just fine. And so he could make quick work of Annihilus. I could see Annihilus coming after him, and Annihilus has, like, those claws on his exoskeleton. That's just going to piss Beta Ray Bill off. It's just going to annoy him. All he's got to do is get upset, grab Annihilus by his scrawny little teenage neck, smack him around a couple of times, knock him unconscious, and toss him wherever he wants. He can toss him down onto the Earth, through the atmosphere, toss him over to the moon, toss him back towards the space station, whatever. And then Scar by now will definitely have become Scar again. He'll be that big green Conan-looking guy. But what's he going to do? He can't fly. He can throw a sword at Bill, but that's not going to hurt Bill. Now, Stormbreaker allows Bill to fly. He can use it as a hammer just for smashing. He can also fire mystical blasts with it. And so he has plenty of options at his disposal. Yeah, Scar is strong, but I'm going to wager that Bill is stronger. I haven't seen anything from Scar that would show him to be on par with Bill. He's close, but he's not on par with him. And really, up in space, what's he going to do? The second he hits Bill, he has no footing. He has nothing. He's just floating in free space. Bill can fly over to him, hammer him towards the sun, hammer him down towards the earth, and let him have fun in re-entry. You know, that won't kill Scar at all. But what's Scar going to do? Just watch from as he's falling to the earth? I mean, it's not going to feel good when he hits the earth. Or he could just blast him with that energy from Stormbreaker until he knocks him out. And I'm not sure. I don't know how it works with Scar, if it works like it does with Banner. But, you know, like when the Hulk gets beat up enough, he kind of gets unconscious and he becomes Banner again. Beta Ray Bill easily has the strength to do that to Scar. He has bested Thor in hand-to-hand combat. He has held his own against the Silver Surfer in hand-to-hand combat. I mean, nobody can really injure the Surfer. And he has beaten and knocked out Stardust while Stardust was Herald of Galactus and on an urgent mission from Galactus, imbued with the power cosmic. Beta Ray Bill owned him. And so I don't really see... That's how I see this fight going.
All right. Wow. That was a mighty rationale there.
I may have a little more, but I'll let Dan go.
All right, Dan. What do you got to say?
Always fun to go up against Eli. Okay. Well, you know, you're saying Annihilus isn't much of a team player, which is true. I mean, the guy is ultimately paranoid. He's ridiculously paranoid, as you put it. But he has reluctantly teamed up with Thanos and the Fantastic Four, actually, you know, for a common goal. And, you know, considering he's currently in adolescent form, I think he would strategize in seeing the advantage of teaming up with somebody like Scar to be his actual muscle. You're right. Either or aren't, you know, Scar and Annihilus aren't the best team players. But I don't think they would care either way, as long as they have a common goal. You know, Scar also doesn't like to work with people. He wants to get stuff done. And the same with Annihilus. He wants the goal to be achieved. So I think even though they're not working together, I think their common goal will allow them to actually persist and defeat that common enemy, much like many great villain and hero team-ups that we've had before, Magneto and the X-Men against Apocalypse and all that stuff. Exiting the space station is a good strategy. I don't know how easily Bill would, you know, strategize about leaving the space station in some sort of scrap heap in space, you know, although you did mention he can teleport. I also wanted to mention that the blasts that Annihilus, his energy blasts, I believe they do come from him and not necessarily the cosmic control rod. From what I've read somewhere, I don't know how accurate that is, though. And aside from that, the only thing I could see, as you were saying, that Scar would launch himself to Beta Ray Bill and missed his shot. All it would take is for Annihilus to just grab him and chuck him back at Bill, you know, in some sort of cannonball type of, what do they call it? The Wolverine Colossus throw?
The fastball special.
Some sort of fastball special, not in that same sort of campy way, but, you know, just out of desperation in this sense. Because I think, I'm pretty sure Annihilus would use Scar as a tool to fatigue Bill enough so that Annihilus could probably actually defeat both of them is probably his ultimate plan, to use Scar until they're both worn down, and then he could just, you know, blast the hell out of the of the space station and blast the hell out of both Bill and Scar. So that's the way I see it going.
All right.
Well, I don't know what happened after Annihilation Wave. The last I saw Nova with the World Mind power, he killed Annihilus, and then Annihilus was reborn. Mm-hmm. And then as far as I know, the next time we see him is in this very recent FF issue where he's a teenager.
Yep.
So in his most recent appearance, it has gotten to the point he has become so paranoid that he has launched an attack on the regular universe. Because the way that Moondragon showed it to Thanos in his mind is that his desire to be the only life form in existence anywhere was so strong that was his whole reason for this war. That it wasn't because the positive universe was expanding into the negatives. No, he wanted everything gone. And Thanos was able to provide him with something that he was already looking for. Annihilus wanted to harness the power cosmic. He knew that was a real good, a huge source of power. He wanted to harness that to help him to accomplish his goal. And Thanos, of course, synthesizes the power cosmic for his own personal use. He's probably, aside from Galactus or like the Silver Surfer, he's probably the foremost expert on the subject in existence. And Thanos promised him Galactus. And when Thanos was brought before Annihilus to first have their first meeting, Ravenous, one of Annihilus' servants, basically told him, because of your past deeds and your glory, you basically are allowed to have this meeting. We're going to treat you with some dignity. You're not going to approach on your knees. You're going to be able to stand and be treated with some respect and even be granted this audience because of what you've done in the past. And so, you know, there was a lot that went into that. It wasn't that just, you know, hey, here's this guy who can help me, you know, or who can be my muscle. No. There was a lot of thought put into it. And I can definitely see Annihilus using Scar. But Scar is a very smart guy. And like you said, he's not the best team player either. I just don't see that going down so well. They're not going to be best buddies. And when the fight goes outside there, you know, so Scar, you know, he tries to join the fight. Annihilus and Bill are you know, say above him somewhere, below him, wherever in space. So he leaps over there to try and do something. So say he misses. Well, if Annihilus goes and gets him and tosses him back at Bill, all this is taking place right in front of Bill. Bill's not going to be tricked. So it's going to be another case of where there's this giant green guy flying at me. He flew at me once before. He missed. Now the guy I'm fighting stops fighting me, flies over, grabs his little teammate, flings him back towards me. Okay, there's no deception. There's no nothing to take Bill's attention off of the giant green guy flying towards him. And Bill, if that happens twice, what I expect to see is Bill says something noble and perhaps cheesy and hammers the snot out of Scar down through the atmosphere. Just like, get away from me, man. And then he proceeds to beat on Annihilus. And, you know, you brought out about Bill and being naive and underestimating his opponent or something. I can't remember exactly what you said. But Bill has, in one of his recent minis, he took on Galactus. Mm-hmm. Not directly. But he laid out a very intricate plan. And he basically came close to killing Galactus. In fact, he was in the process of killing Galactus because of this plan. He first set out, because he had a vendetta against Galactus, to go after Galactus directly. He quickly learned that wasn't going to work. So he came up with a plan to starve Galactus. So he got ahead of Galactus's feeding track. He found the worlds as soon as the Herald found the worlds. And he basically, he beat on the Heralds. He beat on the Silver Surfer. He beat on Stardust. He knocked Stardust out. And he basically told them all, he said, look, I want Galactus dead. Every world that you two fools find for him to eat, I will destroy. He will not feed. He will die. And the only reason he didn't kill him is when the Galactus was dying, Silver Surfer basically told him, he said, look, Bill, we can't stop you. You can continue this. or you can help us save Galactus, because here's what's going to happen. Either you let Galactus eat this one planet, or if Galactus dies, it'll be an extinction-level event when his life force burns out that will take out, like, 40,000 million light-years or something and kill untold billions of people. So make your choice. And then Bill helped them save Galactus because he realized what he was going to cause more death, and he didn't want to do that. So, you know, he successfully gamed Galactus. The man is a strategist and a planner. He is a very wary and worthy foe in battle. And basically, both of these guys put together, I don't think, have the metal. Even if you had Scar holding Bill and Annihilus just wailing on him, I don't think it would work. He has taken hits from cosmic level guys and been just fine and come right back and won. So with Scar not being able to fly and not being able to really do anything, and Annihilus not having the cosmic control rod anymore, there's really nothing they can do to Bill. Fighting in space is right in Bill's wheelhouse. That is what he does. That's what he did while he was on the Annihilator series. That's what he's always done. And Stormbreaker has all the mystical abilities of Thor's hammer Mjolnir. He can absorb energy. He can fire blasts. He can teleport. It's just too much for these two. Even, you know, two people together.
All right. Are you done?
I'm done. I'm sorry. I really love Beta Ray Bill. He doesn't get... I love the fact that he got some time in this Annihilator series recently. And there's another Annihilator's Earthfall series coming up. But
right.
Bill is just super cool to me. And, I mean, the guy's got a horse face.
Yeah, he does have a horse face.
He's awesome. And he's got a hammer that is just like Mjolnir. Well, what's not to love?
Yeah. Well, any last words, guys? Dan, do you have anything else you want to add?
Not really, except, you know, Scar has also faced the Silver Surfer. He's faced Galactus as well, so he's not a stranger to space and these cosmic characters as well. Just to say that he's not completely naive in the sense that I'm sure he could have a few tricks to take on Beta Ray Bill even in space.
Yeah,
a few tricks, but really when it boils down, he's just a guy floating around, and he's like a dying satellite falling out of orbit. He needs something to cross his path, or he needs to be propelled into the path of something else. And, I mean, what's he going to do? Say, hey, Annihilus, buddy, come on, come toss me over at Bill there.
Sure.
Yeah, and the second, what's going to happen the second Annihilus turns his back? It is over. It is, if Annihilus even does. I mean, so no matter how you slice it, it's not good.
All right.
You don't turn your back on the guy with the big hammer.
And the horse face.
And the horse face.
But you also don't turn your back on the son of Hulk and the insect guy.
The insect guy.
Yeah.
Who almost
wiped out the universe. That's true.
That's true.
This is a tough one, guys. I mean, y'all have the most, both of y'all are probably among the most technical rationale crafters that have ever played the game. And so this is really a fantastic display of both of y'all's ability to show what your guys can do. So I'm gonna have to go back and listen to this a couple times just to get all the fine points that you guys made. So,
and there'll be more on the post, of course.
Of course.
Oh yeah, that'll be fun.
Scans and the like.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, they're coming.
All right, listeners, so what do you guys all think? Go to comicattack.net to post on this episode and be sure to get in there and vote. Email jeff@comicattack.net or leave us a voicemail at 706-761-0115 with your questions or comments. And you, like we said before earlier, you will make it on the show.
Awesome. in 2 weeks, I was going to say next week, but in 2 weeks, actually, is going to be our next show. Next week, I'm going to be out of town, and so we're going to skip a week, take a little bit of a breather in the midst of our competition. And so in 2 weeks, we'll be back here with a new episode, and we'll be joined by, I hope, we'll be joined by Andy Legal, who still has Volstagg and Exodus on his team, and Tom McNeely, who has the aforementioned Gladiator that Eli brought up earlier, and Wonder Man still left on his team. So those are some pretty those are some good matchups that could come up. So that will be in 2 weeks. So you actually have 2 weeks to vote and discuss on this fight with Scar and Annihilus and Beta Ray Bill.
Are we still leaving the poll open for?
Yeah, because there's not a way to really close it. So yeah, it'll sure. just run for 2 weeks. So y'all just get that much more time to argue. So
cool.
Yeah.
So all right. The next podcast will be posted on October 11th. Then.
Yes.
Yes.
That's right. Thank you.
Okay.
We made this a good one, Dan. I think we'll give him enough to hold him over for 2 weeks.
I think so. Plus, there's so much history, I think, with Bill and Annihilus. Not as much with Scar, but Scar's in his short time, he's done a lot as well. So I think there'll be a lot of material for us to go back on and keep arguing on the post. So.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
It'll be fun.
So this our little podcast here is so awesome that you can find it on iTunes. Make sure you go on iTunes, leave us a review, spread the word about our show, follow us on Twitter. As you heard, Jeff got some pretty awesome feedback from real comic book writers on our fight, which is beyond cool. And make sure you also, for sure, of course, come and visit us at COC at comicattack.net and find us on Facebook. I'm getting all lost in this here.
Oh yeah.
And find us on Facebook.
Yeah, find us on Facebook.
Yeah.
There you go. If you can somehow navigate the new Facebook and figure it out, I mean, it's not that difficult, but it seems to be making people crazy. So, but yeah, you can find us on there and on Twitter at COC Comic Attack. So. Check out, go to comicattack.net and check out our articles. In fact, our good friend Billy Dunleavy just put one up today on Beta Ray Bill. So if you want to go and actually learn more about Beta Ray Bill, go check out Billy's column, the Marvel Snapshot column. There's a lot of reviews. The gang at Comic Attack, they're reviewing every single new DC number one book, and so that's been kind of a huge effort. And so if you want to figure out what books you might want to pick up, what books look a little bit interesting, if you care about DC at all, go to Comic Attack and look at all the different reviews. There's tons of other reviews of more than just the big two. There are reviews for lots of Aspen Comics and Top Cow and Archaea and Dark Horse. There's just tons of reviews on there. And of course, please take a listen to our would they be called sister podcasts? Not sister podcast, but I guess brother podcast.
Sister's good.
Sister's good. Yeah, sister's good.
Sister's good because Dan runs one, right?
That's right. That's right.
Not me.
And Andy runs the other, so I'd say sister's pretty good.
Okay, good. So yeah. Tales from the Water Cooler, which features Decapitated Dan and Infinite Speech and the MIA Southern Sensation. We hope that he can get back on the show. And then this coming week, I'll be on again, so that'll be a lot of fun. And the Comics Dispatch, which, who knows, I hope that comes back. And, of course, discussions with Decapitated Dan as well. So got a lot of great hours of listening pleasure for you for absolutely free. So please go and download their stuff and write an iTunes review for them, too, as well. If you listen to those shows. So, Anything else, guys, you got to share? Any words of wisdom or anything else?
I'm looking forward to that Earthfall series. I think that's going to be good.
Oh, that's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always love seeing the big teams square off like that.
So, wait, who's on the big team?
Isn't that from the covers and the scans that I've seen? Isn't that the one where they're showing the Annihilators and they're going up against the Avengers?
I'm pretty sure that's what it's supposed to be.
Oh, and nice. Like,
there's a really good image of Beta Ray Bill just dropping the hammer down on Steve Rogers. He's got the shield blocking it, and so should be good if that's what it's about.
That's very good.
Now, why would Bill do that? Bill must be in a bad mood. That's even worse for Annihilus and Scar.
You would be in a bad mood if you just fell to Earth. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I'm tired. All right. we're going to wrap it up. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks always to Dan and Eli for being here. And as always, for Ian, I hope you didn't miss your train, my friend. We will see you guys in a couple weeks.
My pleasure, as always.
All right.
See you guys.
Yeah, see ya. Have fun. Always.
All right. One day, and also I ran with him. He ran so fast he could not stop. He ran into a barber shop. Fell exhaustionized with his eye teeth in the barber's left shoulder. I had a gal and her name was Daisy. When she sang, the cat went crazy with deliriums, St. Vitus's, and all kinds of cataleptics.